Welcome to the Undermind. My guests tonight are Antiga. Hey, Antiga.
Hey, good evening.
Welcome back. And Johan, the author of Banana Brain. Welcome back, you too.
Hi.
And let's begin by talking about Banana Brain updates, because I checked the SSEIT ladder this time and I noticed that about a week ago, you updated your bot. Is that right?
Yes, I pushed regular updates, and indeed, it made a difference on the lab.
What did you change this time?
Well, what I do is I had to clear all learning about a month ago, and after that, I had to do the pre-learning again. So I let my bot play games against top bots locally, and then I store the results and upload them, so my bot will know which strategies to use. And because the learning is very slow, and it takes about a day for two opponents to receive pre-learn. And every time I have new pre-learning, I re-upload. So that also explains the regular updates.
Machine learning does not seem to be a quick process in general.
No, certainly not.
Are you doing just build order based learning or other mechanisms internally?
It's build order or opening only. But also I'm currently in the process of having better opponent modeling, detecting what the opponent does and have reactions to it. So that will also help my bot to improve.
Feel free to delve into the details, but I completely understand if you don't want to and keep your competitive advantage.
Well, I can tell something about improvements I made, which are not online yet. Because the scouting pattern of the workers of Banana Brain was, well, kind of random. It may have looked quite random, because it actually is random. Because it works by sending the worker to a random location continuously. But now I made a better scouting pattern, which actually moves around the command center or central building of the opponent, and thus gets more information. And this is really needed, because the opponent modeling needs to see all buildings the opponent has.
Scouting seems to be paramount to victory. It is my belief that the amount of scouting is linearly correlating to a win rate. It's almost the most important thing in the game.
Yeah, it can make a big difference. There's been some discussion lately about perhaps a joint project between a few authors to work on a build order recognizer library that authors could plug in. Because what's happening is among sort of the top set of authors, everyone's having to write a opponent build order recognizer anyway. So it seems like there's some opportunity to combine those efforts into a project or a library that could be easily accessed. And then authors, of course, can do their own scouting and own, what they do with that information is up to them, but just purely a system to recognize opponent build orders and openings based on information available.
Yeah, I definitely recommend doing this, and I would like to have a common set of libraries. And especially that we seem to reach a point when BW API 5 will be released, and that will be a long-term release, I believe, then we can begin to truly build on stuff and have these common libraries.
Yeah, McGrave and I and a couple other people, we've been talking about it for a while, because I helped with just sort of providing data on what to recognize and stuff. I'm talking with Dan with Purple Wave, and I've helped with McGraves a little bit too. So, it's an interesting thing because everyone's having to write their own, and I might as well turn it into a joint project library at some stage.
Yeah, it is my opinion that the common denominator is hard to find because, as you said, everyone has a different concept of build order recognition and how should you represent and such. So reconciling those differences is certainly possible, but might not be such an easy task. And so the easier it is to collaborate and the easier it is to build upon something common, the sooner this will be complete. I hope I phrased that correctly.
Yeah, it makes sense. One of the struggles, of course, is different languages. It is always a problem any time a library is written, and what language will it be in? And so of course, all the C++ people would love, and almost all libraries are written in that, because the majority of authors are on that platform. But sort of the people that are outside of that can struggle to make use of resources like that that are available.
And there is the very good question that C++ libraries can be ported to Java. We have seen examples, a lot of examples. Should we do that or should we write stuff in Java from scratch? And it's not that easy of a decision. And also Python is gaining traction, I believe, not just with Mr. Slot's project, but I feel Python is the preferred language of AI developers in general, and that has an effect on this scene to a lesser degree as well.
Yeah, it has a big impact on it. Most of the people who come from the AI side are Python, and I'm actually a Python person at heart as well, and so I have a lot of leanings in that direction. And even SATA's new tool that's come out is a Python 3.5x supported function.
Yeah, I like Python as well. I have some gripes about it, but yeah, it is a good language. And the problem seems to be that it's, according to Dan, sometimes it's even slower than Java. So it might not be a best choice when you have to keep performance in mind.
Yes, there are struggles there to be had. Maybe this is a good segue into talking about SATA-RL, since we're talking about Python and libraries and stuff already.
Absolutely. That was going to be the next topic. So yeah, we have SATA-RL, which is an environment provided by the Samsung team behind SATA, where you can basically practice Unit Micro, if I understood it correctly. But that's not the whole picture.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. Obviously, releasing a large open source platform for individuals who are interested in learning in AI for StarCraft is a big project for them. There's obviously probably elements in here that they can use on the competitive side of things. It's really very interesting. They have sort of a split SATA agent and SATA environment system that does actions and then observation rewards. And you can use OpenAI Gym to train basically models, and they have some sort of examples of like Vulture versus Zealot, Avoid the Reaver that individuals can use. And they even have published, perhaps most interestingly, they published some algorithms as part of this, which are often based on other projects, but still algorithms are often quite valuable things in the field of AI research and some of the most competitive areas of development. And I especially find the portions dealing with gradient descent in SARSA to be really very interesting. They're using a bunch of different value-based portions in the agent, like Rainbow, SARSA, Gradient Descent, and SARSA, DRQN. This probably don't mean anything to people who don't do stuff with AI research, but it's really interesting. And it's going to provide ability to train models, especially on the micro side, that will probably be used in future competitive bots and efforts.
And to be precise, this is deeply reinforcement learning, and I have no idea how it works because I'm just starting to get into machine learning. As you might have noticed, my bot is not up to the level when I can actually make use of machine learning. But it is indeed a very good step in both advancing AI research and popularizing the Brood Wars AI scene. I don't know, Johan, did you check that out?
Well, I read the about SIDA, the RL environment, but I think it's quite interesting. But, well, my bot is also not doing any real machine learning yet, so other than opening selection. So, well, I don't really have, well, not ready to use that kind of things.
It's interesting, you know, I think that there's some things to be learned from the Cherry Pie effort, as well as how other bots are sort of, and authors are starting to think about how to implement some of these trained tools. And I think it's really in a very modular fashion. I think very few people are saying, we want to use it, do a completely machine learning bot. People are saying, well, let's take and let's just do our Vulture micro. Let's just do our Mutalisk micro. Let's just do our Wraith micro, right? They're taking small, specific instances and trying to train and then plug in their model and use it for a very specific situation. And I think that's probably a wise approach. And bots are in some ways being rebuilt to be modular so that you could have, you know, trained model for Vultures version 1, 2, 3, and then you could have, you know, hard-coded versions of Vulture micro versions 1, 2, 3 and switch between them to try and ascertain which of those is best and compare them.
These kind of decisions that usually lead to hilariously bad games sometimes. Like
that they can. There's a lot of ways for this stuff to cause issues, but that's why you have, you know, you have your backup hard-coded system, then you have machine learning-based system, and, you know, if you break a portion of it, maybe you could even switch between the two on the fly. Would be a really interesting implementation.
I believe it's not a mutually exclusive thing. The term if-else bot gets thrown around a lot, but good luck writing any kind of bot without if-else statements. And I believe machine learning is a great tool, but it is, at the heart of it, it's fine-tuning some values and finding the best values to doing some task, or finding the group of values or paths. But to find out what exactly you want to find out, that's the hard part.
Yeah, and I think that it works best in very narrow, specific instances that are really well-defined. If you give it too many variables, it takes too long to train, and the results are harder to interpret and use, and that really its abilities are best spent in really specific individual cases, I think, at this time.
Yeah, and like Banana Brain that uses the learning for a very specific task, right?
Yes, right.
Speaking of Python and group projects, another thing I wanted to talk about is the Artificial Overmind League, which is StarCraft 2, but it is about writing AIs and basically the same thing as SSEIT, but in StarCraft 2. And it is great that they have that, but the way it is built, it's supposed to be a team project. The StarCraft 2 bots supposed to be team projects. And that's also a very, very great step. And it's popularized by, I think once a month, Serral, a very famous StarCraft 2 player, will play the top bot. So it is incentivized to have some human bot versus human play as well. It is quite interesting. Oh, it is Python, if I did not mention that.
It is really quite awesome, and it's amazing to have, you know, one of the best players in the world involved in an effort like that. And you know, really, the teams need to work really hard to, you know, live up to that opportunity that's being made available to them. It is difficult to do AI as part of a team. A lot of the portions of AI development and programming in general, you know, as we know, in some ways, is almost as much art as it is development. And when you have groups like that, you have to have a team lead team leader, and you have people assign different portions of the project. You have to split up and divvy the work and track tasks and all of that, that is a little less necessary for individual projects. And it adds complexity, but of course you get more done with more people if you're well organized.
And of course you need to have 3 meetings a day, use Jira, and don't give anyone access to anything. I mean, that's what I learned.
Oh no.
That's what I learned during enterprise development. That's the way to go forward.
Just be glad as long as it's not security being a super high priority in the software, then it's even worse. Review and review and review and get approval, change anything, and yes. The art of lengthening projects to eternity.
You mean you don't have laser sharp focus on the next quarter's achieving synergy? That's shocking to hear. Shocking.
Let's not talk about synergy and all of that.
I might have triggered some PTSD here. All right. Speaking of SC2 bots and this artificial overmind, I would really like to do this and really want to participate in something like that, but my time is not infinite, and I was always passionate about not starving, so I need to work during the day. So I think this will be in the closet of broken dreams for a while now. Johan, did you do anything with StarCraft 2 yet?
Well, I didn't do anything with StarCraft 2 AI, but I have the game. I played the campaigns because, well, I like Brutfarm more, so that's why I decided to work on a Brutfarm bot and continue working with that. Also because working on one bot takes almost all my time, so I can only do one thing.
Same for me. We all know that Brood War is a superior game. There is absolutely no question.
I tend to think so too, but it's more of a slight difference, not a major one, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it might shock you, but people are allowed to like different things. And speaking of Seda, you just mentioned before the cast that Seda is turned off in the SSEIT ladder, and that might be a sign of something to come.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, obviously all we can do is speculate on what they're doing. Though that said, with the Seda RL release, their machine learning sort of system that people can play with. I think it's very obvious that they're not walking away from StarCraft development because they just released this massive tool 3 days ago. So that said, it is really not unusual for bots to be turned off right before competition seasons. That said, the impact of doing so, I think, is pretty minimal because most people have a downloaded copy already that they can use to test against and use internally in their own testing. That said, it's really not that unusual. And they're far from the first author to do that or group to do that before COG or CIG, it's been renamed to COG now, a tournament here that will be coming up here quite shortly. Really no surprise.
Yeah, Crazio does it all the time.
Oh, I gotta rip Crazio. About every year he threatens that he'll actually show up to COG or AID, but we all know he won't enter an open source tournament with his bots. So it's just funny that he tries to trick people into wasting time preparing against him every year in chat.
Yeah, let's not speculate on that. Another thing I just remembered while we are speaking about members of the community, that I'd like to congratulate to Habbo, Javier Sacido, to getting the AI scholarship from the Udacity Facebook thing we just heard about lately. It's basically all I know about it. It is an AI scholarship and just available to a select few. So congratulations.
That's awesome.
All right, and speaking of public service announcements and group projects, let me talk about, myself mostly, but the Bladder project, which is coming along steadily. And since I get a lot of inquiries how it's going, I'd like to take the opportunity and talk about that. First of all, we have come up a slightly better name. It is Schnell now, which is an abbreviation for StarCraft Human and AI League. And I think it's funny, but it's just slightly better than Bladder. At least it's presentable to the public now.
So it's actually a lot better.
Getting there. And it is unfortunately just a weekend project for now. For me and the other participants as well. So the speed, let's say it's a snail pace now, but that's not really true because we achieved a lot of things in the last few weeks. The game server, the main core of the functionality that makes games and well handles disconnects and such things, is almost production ready. At least according to Hannes Bradberg. So if anything is wrong, you should blame Hannes. So yeah, that's the most important part of this. And other than that, the different parts are working along and we have a somewhat stable client. It does not handle edge cases at the moment, like disconnecting or killing from Task Manager, and does not have user management, and also it is quite unpolished at the moment, but it is working. And we would like to begin like the alpha or beta, I don't know how to call it, phase as soon as possible. Realistically, it will be in a few weeks, but I'm not making any promises because anything can happen. And I would like you to act as if you heard about it the first time and ask me questions, because I encountered that for a lot of people, it's not clear what we are trying to do here.
Okay, well, if there's a beta in a few weeks, can we all try it out then, everybody on the Discord?
It is allowed, yes. My plan is to not make it public, but everyone who wants to try it out, of course, can. Actually, you can do it now, but it is not stable, and we are redeploying the parts all the time, so it is not a pleasant experience. But certainly, if you are interested in like alpha testing and giving feedback, you are welcome to do so.
Does it have a website yet?
No, that is one of the tasks we want to do. And certainly when it is going public, there will be a website when you can register, read about the project in itself, and basically a game league website that looks at least halfway decent.
Cool. I'm just excited for it.
I wonder which bots will be available to play against.
The plan is, since SSCIT allows to download the bot binaries, and I just spoke with Certichkid that we are allowed to download and run the bots on the our snail ladder. I will just get a cherry pick of bots from SSCIT, but if anyone does not want their bot to be enabled, I will just disable it. So it's kind of opt-in.
And currently it's 4.4 watts or later, is that correct?
Yes.
At the current time? Okay.
We enforce 4.4 API version.
In that case, I believe there will not be a lot of bots on your ladder then, if you really only allow 4.4.
Not at the start, and it was a decision that involved some thinking about it. But yeah, I believe that is the correct decision to make here.
There's quite a few security improvements and other fixes in 4.4 that are fairly important for competitive environments.
Yes, I understand. But I know that in this case, Banana Brain will be there, but how much other bots will be there? Which bots already went to 4.4?
There's about half a dozen at the current time, and several others in progress and changing over. I think, I won't say who has said that they will, but there's a fair number of the top competitors that are planning on it. Of the top 10, maybe half of them have it in progress that haven't done it already.
I view this as an ongoing process, so since there will be a beta period, we will try to help as much as we can to accommodate everything. But 4.4 is non-negotiable. Currently, only C++ bots are supported, but in a matter of days, I believe the JDK will be installed, so Java bots can participate as well, or maybe just the runtime environment. I mean, did you know that 12 billion devices run Java? We don't want to miss out on that.
Gotta add more.
Just add one more.
Yes, it will be 12 billion and one. And I would like to support Python bots as well. And if there is any other language which are bots written in, then just contact me and we will see what we can do. I only know of one C# bot that maybe is running.
I'm just thinking about COG and CIG and aid preparation and all of that. I'm kind of in the middle of helping consult and help people on the preparation side of all that. I'm mainly working with McRave this year. primarily, along with a couple other folks. What are you guys' experience with the tournament? Are you guys doing any prep work or?
I'm not at the moment. I'm quite occupied with like pursuing my own goals, and it turns out that I'm more interested in exploring obscure sub problems and solving them perfectly than actually having a proper ranking on the ladder. But Banana Brain is evidently more competitive.
Yes, I'm still working hard on it. But probably the first tournament I'll be taking part in will be the yearly tournament at the Student StarCraft AI. So, because I really need more time to prepare. And all the tournaments require my bot to be open source. And I don't think I'm ready for that at this moment. Maybe later, but not this moment.
So you're looking at SSCAT for in the fall.
Yes, I hope to be ready at that moment, because I still have a lot of features to add to Banana Brain.
You know, it's really cool to see. It's been playing really well. You know, you've been doing a bunch of different updates on different days, and you've been beating up on a few people that you weren't able to beat up on before. So it's pretty cool to watch.
Yes, it's very nice, but I have still some opponents which are very difficult to beat, like Crazy Oteran, Seda, of course, Locutus. They are still very difficult to beat, so I still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and they're going to be rough. It'll be really interesting to see what Seda brings to the tournaments this summer. And of course, Locutus' author has historically gone to both of these tournaments as well. So we'll likely see, in my opinion, pretty high confidence that we'll probably see highly improved versions of Seda and Locutus at COG and AID. It should be very interesting.
As you probably also see them at the Student StarCraft AI tournament.
Yeah. AID especially is probably even a bigger event for on the academic side. You know, tournaments have different focuses, but AID, the prestige involved is on the academic side is quite high, and so you see a great deal of time and energy put into especially the research side bots or company-based bots in that direction.
I would love to just go to AID and learn about smart stuff. I might just do that as well. All right, then big topic switch. First, a news and a little bit sad one that Jealous is a kind of pro player. I know it's not a pro, but let me say that. A good player who streamed the Man vs. Machine matches for the last few weeks, and we were quite glad that he did it, but he decided to stop it. And that's his decision, and I would like to not devolve into gossip about that, but he named one of his reasons is the toxicity of the community. Not the SSCIT community, he was very clear about that, and but in general. And I would like to talk about toxicity and like behavior in general, because as I see it, this is a serious problem in online communities when they grow larger. And I hope that the SSCIT community, or let's say the Brood War AI community, will continue to grow. But at that point, we eventually have to deal with this. And I think we all saw content creators burn out from this effect. Antiga, you might be a little bit more involved in this. What are your thoughts? And of course, Johan, you can interject as well. What are your thoughts on this?
it's interesting. You know, I've been around the StarCraft community, both on the competitive side, you know, for a lot of years, and, you know, having been involved and played in quite a few tournaments, and been a StarCraft coach, and worked with SC2GG and Team Liquid, and done casting and a bunch of different stuff. The communities, like all online communities, you know, that are kind of large, they have troubles. You know, they have individuals that are involved that can be a little rough to be around. And that is very much less so in the AI development communities, because most of the people are really interested in progressing the future of AI. And, you know, they love the competitive side of it too, but more interested, and they do it as for fun and as a hobby. There are some, you know, corporate sponsored projects that are a little more serious and have deadlines and objectives and things like that. But it varies. You know, I try to be pretty careful with the SC Brood War community. You know, I act as the moderator for the Discord, and really authors need to, in order to be removed from the Discord, they have to have offended a lot of people repeatedly and been repeatedly banned to get permanently removed. And that's a really rare thing that's ever happened. I've only ever given a ban to one author on a one-year basis once ever in 4 years.
So then jokes are not considered as repeatedly offending.
No. So really the bar there is pretty high, and I purposely, you know, we purposely keep it that way. But the SC Brood War, sort of, especially the foreign competitive scene, can be really, really cutthroat and pretty toxic. You know, they want to kill and take out and embarrass the other player, not just, you know, beat them and improve skill and practice and become better. You know, there's some aspect of that that goes on at a pretty large scale. It's lessened in recent years, but there has been a lot of sort of under table gambling involved on the foreign Brood War scene, which is kind of can be a little unhealthy, but there's really not much that can be done about that. People can do what they wish, betting on matches, etc. And some of that does influence the way people treat the game and approach it.
Johan, what are your experiences with this?
I don't really have experience here with toxic behavior, and I'm not really part of the Brood War scene, so, well, I do not seem to notice this happening. Also, when one of the bot authors got banned from the Discord, I did not, I was not aware of what was going on. It was completely a surprise for me. Yeah. So, don't you really have experience? Not really a relevant experience for this topic.
That's good to hear, because I feel that this community is very collaborative, and we tease each other all the time, especially then. But it is all in good spirit, and it should remain so. I was just a little bit surprised by Jealousy's decision, and that's why I brought up this topic. Again, not gossiping about him. He had his reasons, and I think we can respect that.
I have been trying to reach out to see if we can find another sort of player to be interested in doing it regularly. I've done quite a bit of playing against the bots, but I have played the bots so much that even unconsciously I exploit their weaknesses when I play them, which makes me in some ways a not fair evaluator anymore, because I know too much about how they work under the hood. And that's a problem that will plague other people that come in to play the bots in the community. that over time they become more and more accustomed and know more and more about how they function, are more easily able to exploit them. And it's an interesting factor, you know, because really the people that come in from the outside that are fresh have a really easy, you can really kind of clearly evaluate how good they are versus how good they are, how good the bot is, based on their MMR and the record in the games that they play. But, you know, once they've played 50 or 100 games versus bots, they start to pick up on the things that are going on under the hood, and probably win quite a bit more than they would playing blind. And it's an interesting problem that's not easy to approach.
I have a quite simple observation. Bots don't mind losing. And that's one of the key thoughts behind the bladder, which is Schnell now, and I should say that. Let me share you a personal anecdote. I was playing League of Legends for some years. I'm not saying competitively, but I played a lot. And after that, I think for 3 or 4 years, I only played single player games exclusively. I just couldn't log in into anything that involved other people. And I would like to I would like to offer some solace to people who might have had a similar experience, because I did not stop playing League of Legends because I hated the game.
And League of Legends is notorious for being one of the most difficult communities to be around online as far as the gaming experience. It's one of the roughest. It's in there with Eve, which is brutal.
You can play a verbally abusive space accountant. What's not to like? And I know you play Eve, so
it's a form of self-hatred, I think. I don't know. Eve is its own thing.
Yeah, and I'm just joking. So, as a closing thought to the toxicity, I think what you can do as an average user is the opposite of what I feel is the vocal minority doing. So if you like something and someone did a good thing, just say so. Like, leave a comment that, good thing, dude. And that can mean a lot lot to content creators and keeps them going. And you don't need to overly praise anything or go above and beyond. Just a good job every now and then. And I'd like to stress that I'm not speaking about my stuff. I'm doing my blog and podcast, and I will do that if no one likes it as well. So I'm a sociopath. This does not apply to me, but. Please just do that if you can.
And I'll just say that, you know, understand that there's a difference between criticizing someone's bot and criticizing them personally. And it's really easy as a bot author to take criticism of your bot personally. And understand that that's really not the case. You shouldn't accept, you know, personal criticism really as a bot author, but you should be very willing to accept criticism of your bot and project. Because a lot of that criticism is fairly helpful most of the times in the way that it's presented. The community is pretty technical and can point out flaws that you will miss. And all of us, you know, who have done a fair bit of development on bots have made thousands and thousands of mistakes and found old bugs and old problems that, you know, are not obvious to us. And really a third party shows us something in a way that we would never find. That said, you know, some people use that as a, you know, criticism of their bot as a competitive drive and feed on that. Others, it can drive them away. So, you know, yeah, just exercise patience with people and have fun. It's a good time. So,
yes, for me, this criticism actually works to help my bot get better. For example, I believe a week ago, you saw a game on, I believe it was Colosseum, where the building placement of Banana Brain was, well, I would say completely bananas. It made no sense, but by now already fixed that. And I really don't have time to watch all games, so it's very nice if someone points something out, then I can improve from that.
A lot of the bots are that are playing on the new sort of human maps that are from the 2019 current Brood War ladder season are learning a lot of interesting things, I think. And I think authors that get involved in that kind of get a leg up on what it'd be more like to play current modern players because they're dealing with those same maps and same problems.
Yes, indeed. But I hope there won't be much island maps in the map pool, because Banana Brain cannot deal with them at all, and it will not be easy, I think, to make a deal with that.
Yeah, it's a challenge for sure. You know, we don't know what the next season of maps will bring from Blizzard. We have no idea. We'll probably find out here in another couple of months, and then we'll have another pool to work through. But it's interesting because humans also have these same problems when a new pool comes up. And oftentimes, if there's a unique map in the pool, they don't know how to play it until they've played it a lot and worked on it and timed things and experimented. And all that takes time and experience, and bot authors have to deal with that same process.
Plasma is my favorite.
We do not speak of Plasma. Every year that it's in the CIG COG map pool, everyone prays that it is not played because it breaks almost every bot.
So beautiful.
It's pretty great. When the meta on a map is one base carrier as the human meta, you know you've got an interesting map on your hands. So.
Oh, yeah. So, what I wanted to say about constructive criticism is, as software developers, we are kind of used to that. I mean, it is usually a team and a collaborative effort, and if you work at a half-decent job, you learn to take and give code reviews and criticism properly. And I would love to give... I would love to love this to be a thing when authors just give code reviews and proper technical dressing downs to each other in a constructive way, as of course. It's definitely a thing we are capable of. Then again, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, you know, an old something that people have done in the community a few times is, you know, they have a bot that they're having trouble with, and they go, well, I'll make it open source, and then all you have to do is show it to Nubai, and it will hurt his eyes so much what you've done that he will send you fixes. and it's just sort of a fun thing that people get into, is when you have a bot that has source available, people start to start fixing your stuff and sending you things, even unsolicited, because they're reading your code and just start shaking their head and say, no, here's a better way to try this. And they just send you an email. So there are some advantages to having bots that are open source, because people use your bots for inspiration. You know, they say, well, I need to write a new building place, or how did the top three bots that are open source do it? And you go read that and you save yourself hours and hours and hours of time. Then you start implementing it yourself. And then somebody else is reviewing your bot, trying to figure out how they're going to do something. And they look at a section and go, you've made a big mistake here. And they send you an email, right? And so there's some advantages there. it being part of that sort of open source portion of things.
Yes, I can see how this might work. Hopefully, you will not get in a situation where multiple people will fork the same bot and make minor changes.
Bot development by incompetence, the new leading edge development process.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are licenses that can, like, Locutus has done, he has a really interesting license where basically his bot is open source, but he requires his permission to enter it into tournaments, right? So you can't enter a tournament without talking to him first. And that works really well, because really there's no, it's a custom license, but that's fine. And it works perfectly.
Okay, that seems like a good idea.
Yeah, that.
Because then you get, almost all the advantages of, you know, open source and sharing and development without any risk on the of having a copy competitor, right? So.
Yeah, and it's a great middle ground, I believe. And I mean, there was the fork Utus fiasco, which I just named, so I'm very proud. I would be a great tabloid journalist. But yeah, it was disappointing to see two or three Locutus forks and basically doing the same thing.
But, you know, now that that license has been written that way, I don't think that'll ever happen again. And I think that his way of writing that license is very wise. It's a lot of the advantages without really any of the deficiencies, because really the tournaments are the main competitive thing. And outside of that, what does it matter if someone forks it and uses it for some other purpose? It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Okay, a big topic switch, and I believe that will be the last today. Did you know that there is an unofficial expansion to StarCraft Brood War written around 2000?
Yes, I'm trying to remember the name. It has a new campaign and new missions and a bunch of stuff. And it was not an official, like, Blizzard project. It was a third party.
Johan, have you heard about that?
Yeah, I believe I read it somewhere in the Discord, but I did not really check it out yet.
It is called Hooncraft, and it's as you can guess, it's a Hungarian unofficial expansion, and originally it only were available in Hungarian. And it has new cutscenes, graphics, well, very amateurish looking graphics, even for the time, and three new units, and as you said, custom campaigns. And I completely forgot about that. For people who don't know, I'm from Hungary. So, yeah, of course, I knew about this, but it was so long ago, I completely forgot about that. And I'm thinking to reaching out to the original team, because if someone, then they would be probably interested in Brood War AI development.
That would be really cool. I never played it, just heard about it. I don't think it was very popular, probably outside of the host country. But
yeah, because there was no English translation.
But I believe there is now an English translation.
I believe there is, but for a very long time there it was just for Hungarian players, which was a mistake, I believe, but hey, it was almost 20 years ago.
Trivia.
Yeah.
We could almost have a StarCraft trivia at the end of this every few weeks. That'd be funny. Who knows it, who doesn't?
Name the three units from Homecraft.
Yeah. Don't use Google.
Well, good luck using Google, really. So I think it is hard to find even with that. And I'm not sure of that, but one of the units were a Terran flyer that could attack only ground. So similar to the Banshee in StarCraft 2. And it was called Phantom, I believe, and used graphics that was similar to the StarCraft alpha pictures. And it's very funny because I don't know if that was intentional.
Yeah, if you're trying to Google it and you want to look into it later, it's spelled H-U-N Craft, and you can find it under that name.
Yep. I will provide a link in the podcast description. I'd like to take the opportunity to share an affiliate link with you. It is about Hired.com, an online job search platform. There you can submit a profile and employers will come to you with offers. It is a great platform, I tried them out personally and can honestly recommend them. If you get hired through them, you even get a cash bonus. Link will be in the description, and now let's return to the show. So I lied, it's not our last topic, the Homecraft. I wanted to talk about a little about combat simulators and general unit micro development. Johan, you mentioned a few things about that, and I quite liked when you revealed the dirty little secrets of Banana Brain. And I just started developing something resembling a combat simulator now. Now I just do damage simulations, and it's a surprisingly complex and hilarious thing.
Yes, I understand it's a very complex subject. But we already have some libraries that can do that. But currently Banana Brain uses none of them. And combat simulation is simply done by just looking at supply numbers, actually. And it also takes terrain a bit into account, that range units on high ground are stronger. But mostly it is just supply counts. So, well, there's a little room for improvement there also.
Yeah, we were trying to decipher the defensive matrix logic on the Discord, and it was quite funny because there are contradicting sources on it. Antiga, without looking up, or did you read that discussion?
I did. I kind of, there's some really fine and obscure points of nuance in Brewer that I don't really care about people using Archons versus Terran. I don't really consider it a serious thing. It's just sort of fun trivia.
Yeah, so the basic thing was presumably when you defensive matrix a Protoss unit, and then there is a little bit leak through damage, which is half HP per attack, and that directly applies to health instead of shields. But I tried that out, and that does not seem to be the case. I tried out with shield units with shield, units without shield, and always the leak through damage was present, but was applied to shields. So maybe this is just an urban legend, or got patched out in some versions.
Yeah, well, that's really too bad. I believe you were hoping for easy way to kill Archons.
Well, there is an easy way of killing Archons. It's called EMP, and you have the science vessel already there. I know it should be researched, but still, I mean, it's very fun to think about these things, but unfortunately, this yet again we have failed to invent a new way to kill things.
If you're going back, if we're still talking about the combat simulators, there's a whole ton to unpack there. There's at least a dozen different types and major implementations. Banana Brains, it sounds like it's another one of those unique implementations of it. Spread through different bots and libraries, etc. And there really is not a consensus on what is the right way. Some of the really interesting implementations were actually done as part of AITT. If you want to read really simple combat simulators that are good introductions to combat simulators. Some of the AITT bots have really good, concise, short examples that you can use for reference. Because they had to implement them in a short amount of space and didn't have a lot of space available to do large or complex systems. And actually, there's in about 12 lines, you can write a combat simulator that's 90% or 95% as good as what the top bots run. That's quite concise. So there's several examples of that that are available if you're willing to do a little bit of code reading.
Well, could it be that those simulators can be so simple because AITT bots are also very simple and probably don't use the more complex units or more advanced units? So if you only have to take Marines into account and sell lots of sensor workings, for example, then you can make it a lot simpler.
Yep. That's true, but the specific portions that I'm working about have been ported to full-size bots and work almost as good. So they don't have to be really complex. There are sort of simplistic implementations that do pretty well. The things that are, of course, the hard portions are dealing with things like cliff tanks, but you can do really well with a simplistic simulator on the ground. In the open, without a lot of effort, that is quite competent. So, and FAP is really pretty good as a base system as well. That's available off the shelf.
I'm curious about how did you approach the number of units that are involved in the conflict? Because a natural thought is to assign units into squads and have some squad level logic that maybe overrides the individual level logic. But the squad can be spread out and stuff can happen. So I'm really not sure how to group units together. And having all units as independent agents, it's maybe not the way to go either.
Well, in Banana Brain, I cluster enemy units, so units that are close enough to each other on the same cluster, and it's also transitive. And I don't really have squads I don't put my own units into squads, but I just look at the position of the unit. Comparing it to the position of the clusters. And if it's well close enough to the cluster, then it's considered to be engaging that cluster, and otherwise I will not take it into account.
What kind of behaviors your units can do? Attacking, obviously, but do you have fleeing and kiting mechanisms?
Well, there are two possibilities, actually. Attack and retreat. It's that simple.
Well, if it works, it works.
That's interesting. You know, it's a unique setup. I haven't seen or heard of one that's like that before. Does it treat the units as individuals and compute on an individual basis, or is it computing as a group total?
And I'm curious, how resource-intensive is Banana Brain's combat simulator part? I mean, percentage-wise.
Well, not very. It simply loops over all enemy units, some star supply counts, and also does the same for my units, but also looks at terrain height. But it's very cheap, because I don't really do a combat simulation. Not in the sense that I have a bunch of units and simulate their positions and behavior, just calculations based on their stats.
Well, a wise man once said that StarCraft is all about having more stuff than the enemy, and while unit micro is important, overwhelming is always possible, and No, numbers are a bitch. If you are overwhelmed, there is no way out.
Yes, that was also my initial idea with Banana Brain. Before I had combat simulation, I just made the macro as good as I could. And then hopefully I have more stuff. That was the way it worked before I did any combat simulation.
More stuff beats less stuff.
Usually it does. Maybe there are some exceptions, like siege tanks, especially siege tanks at a narrow opening, but on high ground. But well, in most cases, it does. Yes.
Yes, siege tanks seem to have a compounding effect, and also I'm wondering if siege tank shots are like instant things, not a very quick bullets, right?
I believe they're instant, indeed.
For lack of a better term, they are hitscan type attacks. Because I seem to recall a unit getting shot by a siege tank and getting picked up by a shuttle immediately. And I don't know that maybe it was a high ground shot, but the unit should have died and didn't.
Okay, that's some weird behavior. I can't really explain that.
Like I said, it is possible, thinking back, that it was a high ground shot, so it missed. But it got me thinking that maybe it is really just a very quick bullet. But I will look up in the source code. And also, I was watching some StarCraft matches in my off times, which I don't have many of. I was wondering if there is a way to bug Scarabs, and maybe a bot can exploit that. Scarab behavior is all sorts of weird. Have you encountered some consistent way to either land or not land Scarab shots?
Yes, and there are some bots exploiting that right now, actually. So, live. Basically, if they pass between two targets, I have to remember the technical portion of it, but if you pass between a gap that it wouldn't already fit through and then it goes to another target, it won't explode. Or if the path that it takes around to another target is too long, and you can actually move units into the path to extend the path and exploit the distance, knowing that they won't explode. So there's some interesting things that are being done on that front.
Do you know which bots exploit that?
I won't say, because I'm not sure if that's public knowledge or not.
Okay, that's fine.
I plead the fifth for right now, unless one of the authors wants to come out of the woodwork after the cast and say.
All right, I don't really have any more to add here.
I might have something to add, because earlier during this cast, we talked about the fact that Antigua did play against bots. But things he knows the bots too well now, and it would be too easy for him to exploit them. But I think that the version of Banana Brain you played against did not even have a combat simulator, and it has had a lot of improvements over the last year. So maybe there is a time that you would like to play again versus bots that have been updated. So
sure,
I wouldn't say that you have to play against every update, but maybe if it has been a few years, a lot might have changed.
Yeah, that'd be fun. You know, yours being closed sourced, I don't have a lot of experience and have read through a lot of it, so. And having not played it in a while, it would be really interesting to take another go at it. a lot of the bots, you know, I have either, you know, quite a few bots I've either worked on them or helped with the strategy development of them, or read through how they work internally. And it, in those cases, as time has gone by, it's gotten to be easier and easier, unfortunately. Crazio still loses to Fourpool for me, you know, like 4 years later. And it's something that he hasn't been able to patch out, unfortunately. And it really makes it hard to play against like Crazio's bots in any competitive fashion, knowing that all you have to do is revert and play Fourpool and you win. So.
Okay, this is, I think this is interesting because I do not think that Crazio loses a lot to bot Fourpools.
It does lose
to human one.
It does, yes. It's very interesting. Human-based Fourpool, if you control it well, kills every opener he has. Everyone. And it's, you know, it's just sort of an unfortunate piece that, you know, it's immune to bot Fourpools, but not to a human one that's well controlled. There's some things that you can do on the human micro side when doing a Fourpool that exploit its internal functions that makes it very difficult for him to counter those strategies.
Okay. Can you tell me something about those things that you can
do? A lot of this goes back to pathing. So there's been several discussions both here previously on the path and on this podcast and on Discord. Basically, most bots move between their base and the opponent's base. They don't, once they're inside of the enemy base, look for weaknesses and travel around and look for flaws. There's very few bots that use real pathing, and most of those only use them for air units. For instance, Killabot is a good example in its use of mutas that explore around the enemy base, look for weaknesses, and exploit those actively. But ground computations with units that can collide is extremely computationally expensive, and so very few bots are able to do that. And those that do it often do it somewhat poorly. And a human is able to path around inside the base and not just get focused on the bunker that's out front, but kill the SCVs and kill the buildings and exploit the terrain to trap and kill the early Marines, for example, among other things. And there has been quite a bit of talk among the Protoss authors. Dan and I have talked about using real pathing for maybe the first dozen zealots of Purple Wave several times, and creatively exploiting what's possible there before it becomes too computationally expensive for his bot to use those in a full game, use those tools in a full game. And I think there's quite a bit of opportunity to be had there among the Protoss bot authors. And hopefully, does that give some idea of what I'm talking about?
Yes, that's very interesting.
And because, you know, the same thing almost applies, though not quite as directly. Almost every bot that doesn't wall as a Terran, you can kill every opener that they have with Proxy 2 Gate Zealot, if you have intelligent zealot handling and pathing like a human does, and ability to ignore and run by bunkers and things like this, which severely restricts Terran opening options. Seda does have some protections. It's one of the only bots that uses a barrack supply depot combo and paths the Marines between the two for gap. But even it, if you have good human level control, dies early, pretty starkly, to a proxy 2 gate. And the bots aren't capable of that, but human, outside of some exceptions and test cases that have been played with, but humans most definitely are.
Hmm. I hope the human versus bot play will get some spotlight in the near future.
Yeah, it got some from the man versus machine matches, and several other people have done a lot of play versus them. I'm still kind of waiting for a bot to make that next level jump and to be really difficult for humans to handle. Seda was sort of the first one of those, as well as Crazio, to really have the ability to put some real hurt on decent human level players. But really the best bots kind of do, you know, Crazio and Seda versus human, they really sort of in that 1700 to 1900 MMR range, people who haven't played them before, they'll take a few games off of them at the start. But within a few games, the humans learn the tricks and it's sort of game over pretty quickly. And the bot hasn't really made the leap to that next level yet to be really competitive and be able to stay on par over a long haul or a set of large set of games yet. We're getting there, but we need more time and more resources and more people working. So,
yeah, but it is a process. All right, let's wrap up, shall we?
Sounds good. Thanks for having me. Always fun to be on.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for the excellent cast, and hopefully see you again. Goodbye.